Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in another Behind the Bets podcast. We're going three deep on this one. Bill Steele's going to join us, talk about his five plays, went 2-2-1 last week. And Matt Eumanns, who you might remember from the podcast earlier this season, does a nice job with college basketball and college football. So he's going to join us. And we were able to fit Matt in because Mr. Director John Murray had some board meetings, corporate execs, hobnobbing with the suits. So we were able to get Murray back on the pod, but he's fitting us in now. So that's how we roll. Kai, we've already been demoted.
Hey, man. When you sit up that high, it's hard to look down below.
Yeah, he's big timing us all the time. So we were able to get Murray. You know, his time is valuable, so we only get him for a few minutes these days. Mr. Director is certainly a sought-after man out there in Las Vegas. And, Kai, I didn't catch that score of Rutgers. How'd that money line pick turn out?
Well, they did not take the whole 48, if you know what I'm saying. They were able to cover, so... I was vindicated by that a little bit. I mean, the first half, they did decent. I think a lot better than anybody expected. But by the end of the game, everybody knew what the result was. But I will say this. I'm even more vindicated by my Rutgers Scarlet Knights as a community to see Vivian Stringer with the 1,000 wins. That's totally awesome.
So, but you knew that was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew both were coming. I was dealing with
it. What's your record against the spread, though? Like that's what I want to know. All right, no, congrats to her, but you must be a proud alum, and that's good. But so good, though. You got the lingo down, Kai. Like, you know they covered.
I'm chugging along. Yeah, I'm chugging along.
Right, but the money line, you might want to put those predictions a little bit back in the cage for a while.
I knew it was crazy when it came out of my mouth, but hey, what's this show if you don't have some crazy prediction?
That's fair. All right, so let's get into everything straight ahead.
Stop. Hammer time.
Yes, it is hammer time. Phil Steele joins us here. On the Behind the Bets podcast, Phil, roller coaster endings in some of these games. Two in particular you were involved with had the fiasco in Cincinnati in the final seconds. And then also the big game at night, Chris Fowler had the reference to it, BC Clemson. You get the push, but it was certainly hairy down the stretch for a couple games.
Yeah, it was. And Cincinnati, as you pointed out, texted me on Saturday night, sure looked like he was headed to the end zone for the cover in that one, but just didn't happen on the one-yard line. They had a couple games like that where players going down on the one-yard line. Not my place, but overall at the end of the game, which cost a cover.
Well, yeah, so you had the LSU, which was so crazy. I'm thinking about writing about it for my Friday column because the player pulled the Todd Gurley went down.
Twice.
But then Coach O was trying to run more plays. That's what was so strange. Coach O didn't go victory formation afterwards. He was trying to punch it in. And look, colleges don't typically do the victory formation like the NFL or as often as they do. Sometimes you do, in one score games you do, but not like that. It's not that common like it is in the NFL.
Yeah, and I've never seen a player slide down to a knee twice to avoid scoring and then have them try to run a play when they didn't have to. I think that's a first for me in football overall.
And also, so you had a shoestring tackle in the Cincinnati game that the guy was trying to, like, bust it in, and that would have been a miraculous cover. Although it was 11.5 in my pool, so it landed 12. I got there in my pick'em, and maybe if you bet earlier in the week. And then also the Florida Gators had first and 10 at, like, the 12 or 13, and he gets tackled in the one on a shoestring that would have covered.
Yeah, so it was an unusual week around the goal line at the end, and a lot of money changing hands in a brief amount of time.
Right. And, you know, many people were wondering.
Why?
including myself, because I do a pick with Will Cain every Friday, and I give him one play, and so often it's been Alabama first half. This week I went with Cincinnati, so it's the first time I lost all season. So I was trying to run the table, could not. But then even the Alabama had some theatrics with a penalty at the end. So Mississippi State scored not one but two touchdowns that were nullified in the final minute.
What was the halftime line there, Doug?
14.5, 15-ish area.
Wow.
So it was sitting on 14. It was sitting on 21. I apologize. It was 21.
Yeah, and in reality, I mean, you look at that ticky-tack penalty that they called at the end of the half that wiped out the touchdown, and you have to wonder about that one a little bit. It looked like he barely even touched him.
Yeah, it was a phantom block in the back for sure, in my eyes at least. So 2-2-1 for you. I went 2-1 on SportsCenter. So keeping up the streak, I believe it's 22-8. I'm not 100% sure on that. I've had 2 3-0 weeks and then 2-1 every other week. So do the math on that. But I just want to get to 2-1 the rest of it. I want to avoid a losing record. I want to avoid a losing record every week.
That would be remarkable to go the entire season like that, Doug. And who are you leaning towards this week?
You know, I think my favorite play is Minnesota. I think that's the spot play. I would really find it hard to believe to back, or very hard to do, not believe, hard to do to back Northwestern here. I just, like, you can't. Like, they've already clinched a spot in the Big Ten title game, and they are not good as a favorite. I don't believe they've covered all year as a favorite. And, I mean, it's a short line, but I just don't – I think the spot, you have to take Minnesota here.
Yeah, and that's actually one of my five plays this week, Doug, is Minnesota. And, you know, the reason I like it is you mentioned Northwestern. You got to think Pat Fitzgerald has been sitting there at Northwestern thinking, I want to win a Big Ten championship for – this is 13th year there. And since the Big Ten title game happened, he's probably thinking, I want to get to that Big Ten title game. They spend the spring thinking about it, the summer, all season long. Haven't been there. And then to finally clinch it, yes, after all these years. And, you know, they're at the end of a three-game stretch where they just played Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and Iowa. Now your goals are realized. You're going on the road, taking on Minnesota. As you mentioned, they don't do well as a favorite. They're also not a great team statistically. Despite the fact they've wrapped up the Big Ten West already, they're minus 21 yards per game on the season, being outgained. You look at how they've done the last 4 weeks, they're averaging 295 yards per game. On the season, they run the ball for just 2.8 yards per carry. Thorson, over the last 4 weeks, hitting just 52% with a 3-5 ratio. And they're actually throwing for about only 150 yards per game in that span. And not a dominant team. They're also banged up in the secondary. They had numerous guys miss last week's game against Iowa, yet somehow came out of there at the win. And on the flip side of the coin, you know, Illinois' season looked like it was lost when they lost to Illinois, but complete Minnesota turned it around last week against Purdue, fired their defense coordinator, helped Purdue to a season-low 233 yards. They're at home. They need one win to get to a bowl, and they've got at Wisconsin on deck. Got to think they try to get it with all their might here. So it's an A-plus game for Minnesota, and it is a C-minus effort for Northwestern this week. I agree with you 100%. I like Minnesota plus the points at home.
And on top of that, these athletes are not exactly 100% focused on this game because you mentioned Fitzgerald, but think about all the media questions, all the attention on campus. The buzz is about winning their division. So like that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, they're not exactly focused on their opponent. Does that make sense at least?
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, they're probably trying to figure out how to get tickets to the Big Ten title game. Probably be a sellout when Northwestern goes there. So, it's and everybody's patting them on the back. Great job. Love you. You know, all that stuff. And that really has an effect on you.
Well, just exactly. Because, like, think about media availability. Let's say it's Tuesday, right? I'm just throwing out a day. How many of the questions are focused on the Big Ten title game and how many are focused on Minnesota? And it's
cool.
I think that's just reflective of their mindset. And then you go on the road, and I think P.J. Fleck needs wins. I think he's trying to establish himself, and this Gophers team is kind of frisky.
And they need one win to get to a bowl.
Exactly. Another game I have an eye on is, talk about flat spots, is Oklahoma. Now, I'm not 100% sure I'm going to go with it because it's such a big number, and the Sooners have had trouble covering those big numbers the last couple of weeks. But Kansas just put everything on the field in the Sunflower Showdown against K-State. And now they got to go again on the road to Norman, and I can see this game. This might be a first-half play for me. This just might be Oklahoma waxing them, naming the score in the first half.
That makes a lot of sense. I prefer absolutely prefer first half over game for this one, because when you look at Oklahoma, they're off of Bedlam. They've got West Virginia on deck. Now, if they were to lose to West Virginia and Texas win out, they're not even in the Big 12 title game. So they need to win that West Virginia game next week. It's massive. The Oklahoma State game is always big. It's a flat spot for Oklahoma, but you got to think that their offense will do whatever they want to do against the Kansas defense. Now, I can see them in the second half sitting some guys down, getting them ready for West Virginia. So first half would be the best play there.
But you mentioned the sandwich spot element to this. How much confidence do we have in OU coming out strong, knowing that they're playing a team like Kansas?
Right. Plus, it's just Kansas. Yeah. The good thing is their offense, I get the feeling that they want to score points every week. So yeah, as long as the starters are in, could turn into an Alabama situation where you play the starters the first half. And when Kyler Murray and company are on the field, I don't know how Kansas can stop them. So they figure to score each time they have the ball in the first half.
All right, so that's where I'm leaning. What, you have Minnesota plus two as your first official play. What's another one?
Let's go with, last week I threw out a total.
Okay.
We went with the Nebraska-Illinois total.
You got there in the third quarter.
Yeah, that was a nice one. So I'm going to go back with the total, and this time we're going to SEC country for it. And I'm going to take a look at Vanderbilt and Ole Miss. The total is 66.5. And much like last week, I'm eyeing up two teams that are really poor rush defenses. Ole Miss this year on the ground in SEC play, giving up 245 yards per game, 5.4 yards per carry. Now, I'll say this. If you play college fantasy football, find a way to get Keshawn Vaughn on your team. This guy is a dominant running back going against a weak run defense. Keshawn Vaughn should light it up for about 250 yards in this game running the football. And when Ole Miss stacks the line to stop him, you got Kyle Shurmur back there. He's got a 17-5 ratio. He's throwing to Lipscomb and he's throwing to Pinckney. I see Vandy putting up a lot of points on Mississippi's defense, and that's not exactly a shocker.
Yeah, I was going to say, Miss, I don't think you need a crystal ball for that one.
Yeah, they're giving up 43 points a game for crying out loud, 510 yards per carry. But on the flip side of the coin, you know, Vanderbilt can't stop the run. In SEC play, they're giving up 254 yards per game on the ground, 5.5 yards per carry. Now, Phillips is questionable for Ole Miss, but they've got some running backs. Ta'amu can also run the football. He's got 356 yards. So I think Ole Miss will be able to establish a run. That opens it up for Ta'amu and one of the best set of receivers in the country in Ole Miss. They can score on pretty much anybody. I'm frankly a little surprised the total is only 66.5 on this. And check the weather. Weather's going to be good. Should be at worst in the 40s, but a partly cloudy night. So it should be good football weather. Not a lot of wins, and two teams that can't stop the run, which means, look out, we're going to see some points. And I think it'll be much like the Nebraska-Illinois game was last week.
Now, you say something that sort of has I basically hear a lot of people say, oh, running, both teams run the ball under, and that's obviously applicable in the NFL. But in college, when you get chunk yards of 15, 20, and even 8, that doesn't necessarily stop the clock, but the clock stops first downs, so rushing teams can still lend themselves to the over in terms of a generalization.
Yeah, if you're giving up 6 or 7 yards a pop, yes. If the teams are giving up 4 yards a pop and they run the football a lot, then no. But in this case, I see both teams just gashing the other one on the ground, which means you got to bring that safety in the box, play some more man-to-man coverage. That opens you up for big plays as well. And when you take on defenses that are just this bad, I mean, over 5 yards per carry on the ground for both of them, that's just you could pretty much do what you want on offense.
Next game, I want to go to the Pac-12 country, Wazoo, nice cover against Colorado, and you're sticking with the Cougs.
Yeah, and you take a look at this matchup, and you look at Arizona. Temperature's been in the 70s all week for Arizona. They're going up the Palouse. It's Pac-12 after dark. The game starts at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 at night. I think the highs are going to be about 42, which means you're dipping into the 30s at game time. Could be late 20s towards the end of the game. You got Arizona players that are used to 70 degrees. They've been at home the last 2 weeks, so it's not like they've played in cold weather all year. That's a nice big advantage to have. Then I look for a heightened home field advantage here. In the fact, not only do they have the weather on their side, but they are just crazy in the Palouse for Washington State right now. And it's not, it doesn't matter. Game day is not going to be there. They are just, it caught, it has lit them up. They are just all fired up. So you're going to have a sellout home crowd. They're going to be loud at the start. They're going to be loud at the finish. And it's a pretty good Washington State team, too. You look at these two teams offensively, I give the edge to Washington State. I know Khalil Tate's had a couple of good games the last two. One against an Oregon team that was in a bad spot, and the other one against Colorado. He had a good game, but Washington State just lit up that same Colorado team. And then on the flip side of the coin, Washington State's got a legitimate defense. They're holding opponents to 78 yards below their season average. Arizona's actually allowing their opponents 3 yards above their season average. Special teams edge, also to Washington State. So better offense, much better defense, special teams edge, large home edge, better team overall. I like Washington State. I'm surprised, Doug. Spread's under 10. It's only about 9.5. You look at the only other two teams with a winning record that Arizona's played on the road this year. They lost by 27 at Houston. They lost by 32 at Utah. And I think Washington State could be better than both those. So I like Washington State minus the 9.5.
I know you alluded to the fact that they've been at home the past couple of weeks, but obviously Arizona's looked a lot better with Khalil Tate back from injury. And you mentioned the previous times they've had to face teams with a winning record on the road, but how much of the recency, dare I say, bias is a variable here that actually Arizona may be like just a much better team right now at this juncture of the season?
Well, Khalil Tate actually only missed most of the Utah game and the UCLA game.
But didn't he get pulled in some other? I mean, he was abysmal earlier or middle of the season.
But the thing is, Tate's still not running the football. Last year, yeah. Khalil Tate was a guy that ran the football. They have limited his running all year. And even in these last two wins, he had 4 carries for 15 yards, 7 carries for 26 yards. So he has been doing it through the air, but only 189 yards against Oregon. I just think they caught Oregon in a heck of a flat spot there. So we have not seen the Khalil Tate of last year return. We have seen a much better passing Khalil Tate, but the running Khalil Tate is not there, and I don't expect to see that in the final two games.
You mentioned the total you had last week. That involved Illinois, Illini at home today, this weekend hosting the Hawkeyes. A little bit of a rivalry game there. 14.5, and you like the Hawks to put up some points against that Illinois D.
Yeah, you know, Iowa comes into this off 3 straight gut-wrenching losses. They could easily have won each of their last 3 games. The Penn State game intercepted at the 2. The Purdue kicks a late field goal to beat them. They fumbled their last 2 possessions against Northwestern. Actually had a 333 to 306-yard edge. So 3 tough losses against 3 good teams, and they need to get a win. And Coach Ferentz is actually 14-2-1 as an away favorite. Not great as a home favorite, but as a way favorite, 14-2-1. You look at this year, they were favored at Minnesota and won that one 48-31. They went into Indiana, won that game 42-16. Now, I'm going to take it back a few weeks, Doug. Remember we talked about the Iowa-Maryland game that week, and I said I liked Iowa because Maryland needs to run the football to win, and I think Iowa can shut them down. And Iowa did just that. They owned a 68 yards rushing, 3.0 yards per carry. In fact, 7 first downs. For the entire game. Well, Illinois is much the same way. They need to run the football to win, and they have been running on almost every single team they played this year. The one team that really shut them down, surprisingly, was Purdue, held them to 69 yards rushing. That game, Illinois lost 46-7, but they've lost other games this year, like Wisconsin by 29 points. Maryland beat them by 30. Nebraska this past week just beat them by 19. And I think Iowa probably better than all of those teams out there. And coming in off 3 losses, with a much better run defense. I was always at its best when I can run the football. We talked about it last week. The numbers continue to go up, Doug. Illinois' run defense is giving up 288 yards per game on the ground in Big Ten play. How about 6.7 yards per carry? That's almost 7 yards every time you run the football on them. They cannot stop the run. That opens it up for Iowa, an angry Iowa team off of 3 straight losses. Illinois has lost a lot of games this year by over 14 points, and I think this just adds to the mix. Tough weekend for Illinois. I like the Hawkeyes minus 14.5.
Yeah, they're really just not that strong of a football team. Hawkeyes, if they mean business and they want to be this polished kind of upper echelon Big Ten team, they need to go in there and take care of business. And I kind of see where you're going with this. I think they do as well. Final game, Miami on the road at Blacksburg. Lane Stadium, not quite what it has been in recent years. This Virginia Tech team stumbling, I believe, three straight losses. Pretty shaky, and you like the Canes here laying less than a touchdown.
Yeah, and I'm going to take you back to one of my magazine conversations for this, Doug. When I talk to the coaches during the – it's usually about an hour call, go over every single player on the team with them. First string, second, third, fourth string, get notes on each and every player on the team. So I'm talking to Bud Foster, the defensive coordinator for Virginia Tech this year, and we're going over every player on his defense. And I get to the end of the conversation after analyzing the defense with him, and I go, you know, coach, every coach out there says, boy, we're young this year. And I go, well, of course you're young. You've got five classes on the team. You've got seniors, juniors, sophomores, redshirt freshmen, and freshmen. So right there you have 60% underclassmen, and you suffer more attrition with your seniors and juniors. So when coaches say, oh, we've got 65% underclassmen, I say, big deal. In this case, I say, coach, you're young. I mean, almost his entire defense was freshmen and sophomores. He had a handful of veterans at that time. Then over the summer, they lost three projected starters off that defense. And now this season, during the season, they've lost two more of the projected starters. So everybody's wondering, what has happened to Virginia Tech's defense this year? Has Bud Foster forgot to coach? No, Bud Foster has the least experienced defense in entire college football, because the one thing he couldn't afford was injuries and departures, and he suffered them this year. And that's why they're giving up this ridiculous amount of yards and points per game that they have been. Very un-Bud Foster-like, but I tell you what, watch out for Virginia Tech next year. Anyway, that takes us to this game. Miami actually comes in number four in the country. They come in, or number three in the country. They're giving up just 4.17 yards per play. Last week against Georgia Tech, they lost because they gave up a fumbled kick return and a fumbled punt return, both inside their own 10-yard line, basically handing Georgia Tech 10 points in the 27-21 loss. Defense didn't do anything wrong. They played a great game. Now, offensively, I think that you're going to see Miami with their weapons. They've got Homer. They've got Dallas. Both will be able to have big-time games against this banged-up, depleted Virginia Tech defense. So I like Miami's offense to do some damage here, and I like Miami's defense. It's one of the better defenses in the country. They need a win. They only have five on the year. And I'd like Miami to go into Virginia Tech and come out of there with the win by, I think they're laying 5.5. I'll lay the 5.5 in that one.
I'm not in love with Miami this year. Rozier's been shaky, but yes. For all the reasons you mentioned, I see that play unfolding. What do you make of Alabama? You know, that key number of 51.
Well, you know, first thing I want to look at is what my computer has on the game. And my computer spits out Alabama 62 to minus 10. So that's pretty much saying you take the 10 points and the 62, you got to win by 72. But like you said, I mean, you know, they've got Auburn. They've got the big game on deck. The other thing I worry about here for Alabama is that the Citadel runs the triple option. And you look at them this year, they have been running the football on the option all year. But you got some high-priced Alabama defensive front seven players are going to be a little concerned about chop blocks, which that happened a couple of years ago. Remember they played Georgia Southern, I believe it was? Mm-hmm. And Georgia Southern actually had the most yards rushing on them the entire season of any team. And even though they had the most dominant defense in the country, they struggled against the triple option. Now, this is a bad Citadel team. A couple weeks ago, they played VMI, which is a really, really bad team, and beat them 34-32. But they come in 4-4 overall, lost to Furman by 11, beat Western Carolina. But, you know, like I said, the computer's got them up there. But, frankly, this is a game I wouldn't touch, and the cut blocking would be something that would really concern me.
I kind of like the Citadel after you explained some of that. I might be leaning – now, if Tua doesn't play, of course. Because I don't think he's going to play. But I'm leaning towards the
Citadel. If he doesn't play, don't you think whatever quarterback they put in there is going to try to score some points?
Well, yeah, but Saban. You know, he doesn't just say, hey, let's pad the stats. I mean, it's just complicated. I kind of like the Citadel after you broke it down like that, especially with Tua out, because I'm assuming Tua is not going to play. At least that's how I would approach it. And then Jalen Hurts is hobbled, so I'm assuming Mac Jones is the quarterback. But, I mean, he's good. He's capable. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the same as Tua, obviously.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I went back and just looked. It was 2011. Alabama had just an amazing defense. In fact, on the year, Doug, they gave up 184 yards per game, total offense, 72 yards per game on the ground. And Georgia Southern, with their option and cut blocking that year, 302 yards rushing of that. So really, Alabama probably gave out closer to 50 yards per game because that 302 is included in it. They had 341 yards, Georgia Southern did. The next closest opponent all year was Penn State with 251 in the second game of the season. That's how dominant that Alabama defense was, but how poorly they did against the triple option.
Interesting. Well, Tua is slated to play. I got to take Nick Saban at his word, but I imagine Jones will get in there pretty quickly. Other games. Well, first of all, how about some action? Do you have any opinions on the action tonight? Now, I think there's an interesting angle here. Miami of Ohio is catching 7 at Northern Illinois. Now, because of the outcomes last night, NIU automatically gets a bid in the MAC championship game. So maybe a little bit less to play for. Do you like the Red Hawks here catching a touchdown?
Since that happened, I definitely think that that makes Miami a legitimate play. And you look how Miami's been playing this year. They're actually probably better than their record. You look at that game against Cincinnati. That was a game played in a torrential downpour. They're actually only outgained by 35 yards. It was more like even the coach said after the game, it was more like a 7-0 game rather than 21-0. The Western Michigan game, they blew a late lead and lost by a point. They crushed Akron, crushed Kent State. They gave Army a heck of a game. They were down by a couple scores, but rallied and took that thing to overtime. Army's a pretty good team. They gave Buffalo a great game on the road. It ended up losing by 9, but it was actually closer than that. And they just come off a nice win over Ohio. So you've got a Miami team who defensively holding opponents to 33 yards below their season average. Offensively, Gus Ragland's finally starting to look like Gus Ragland. He didn't look like that in the first three games, but now he's got like a 15-1 ratio the last six games. Alonzo Smith can run the ball. And Northern, like you said, since it's clinched for him, it's a lot less intensity. It's tough to deal with that sometimes. So, I would lean with Miami plus the full touchdown in that one. My computer coming in had this one fairly close to the 7, so you'd have to bring it under that.
Yeah, I thought Miami of Ohio played really well last week. I was watching that game. Ohio, I know they've done well, but they just looked shaky in their passing game, shaky. So it was a nice win for Miami of Ohio. Basically, a safety proved to be the difference. But any other games that you would recommend? I mean, you got Michigan laying 4 touchdowns here, potential look-ahead spot. I did like Maryland catching the 17, but that line's obviously down to 14 now, 14.5 at some spots. UCF, 7 against Cincinnati. A lot of hoopla down there with game day in Orlando. Any thoughts on the Bearcats, given the type of season they had? And obviously we can exclude last week's tough one against the spread.
I like the way Cincinnati's playing. In fact, defensively, they're actually holding opponents to 129 yards below their season average, which is the 5th best mark in the country. You look at UCF, they've had some close games. The Memphis game, they needed a late comeback to win. The Temple game, even though they won by 12, they were trailing in the second half. And even last week, they beat Navy by 11. That's the same Navy team that Cincinnati just beat 42-0. I like the way Mike Warren's running the ball. He's got over 1,000 yards. Desmond Ritter's, but probably the biggest difference besides the defense being so great this year, is that Ritter's given him a good pass threat on the offense. So I think, you know, it's tough to go against UCF in Bright House, but I would lean with the points in that one.
How about the bailout game at night? You got Hawaii on the islands laying 6.5 against the Rebels of UNLV off the improbable win against San Diego State. And this Wyoming team's bad, like bad, bad. They've lost 4 straight, and you know, they've just been shaky. The only game they lost, I jumped around a little bit, but basically they've covered 1 of their last 7. One of their last 9. But I almost want to lay the points with Hawaii, just given the flat spot for UNLV and the travel.
Yeah, and I like UNLV plus the points, and I think UNLV can win outright. I'll tell you why. You know, when I talked to Coach Rolovich in the spring going over the team, I was like, wow, this team is, they don't have a lot of talent this year. They'll be lucky to win 3 or 4 games. Then they came out and introduced the run-and-shoot offense. You didn't know who the quarterback was going to be, but it became Cole McDonald. And boom, in those first 5 games, they were lighting it up. They were averaging about, or first 6 games, I should say, they averaged about 45 points per game. But now over the last 5 games, now that everybody's caught on to the run-and-shoot and what it is, they're actually only averaging about 20 points per game, less than half of what they average the first 5 games. So they're struggling offensively. to move the ball like they did, as teams are no longer taken off guard by the run and shoot. Then you look at this UNLV team. Now, last week, the first thing I thought of, because the game wasn't on TV, so I didn't get to watch it, Doug, I try to watch every single game out there, but I wasn't watching that one, was when I saw that they beat San Diego State, I knew they were getting back their quarterback, Amani Rodgers, last week. So I figured, okay, Rodgers, who went out after the fourth game, is back. They were able to get the run game going, surprise San Diego State, beat them. Well, as much as Rodgers was able to return, it was still Max Gilliam throwing the football. It's been a completely different offense for them. At the start of the year, they were averaging over 300 yards per game rushing with a mobile Amani Rodgers, with Lexington Thomas and company. But now with Max Gilliam, they're more of a passing offense. I believe Gilliam's a Cal transfer. So they've got themselves a good pass offense. They got Lexington Thomas at running back, and they are starting to play better. You look at the San Jose State game a couple weeks ago, I thought they played well. Air Force, they almost beat at home. So even though they have a bad season so far and are going nowhere, I think they're playing better. I like the way the offense, which the first game they had with Gilliam, they had 166 yards, but since then, it's almost every single game has been over 400. I like the way UNLV's playing. I would take them plus the points if you're staying up late.
All right, bailout game. You never know. You might need it in desperate times. Call for desperate measures. Any other games jumping out before we let you go, Phil?
Why don't you touch on a couple that you? We normally have pretty good success with that.
I know you do a nice job of talking me through things. BC at Florida State. BC's got quarterback injury issue off the letdown, if you will, with Clemson and game day in town to Tallahassee, which at times has looked dead, then at times has looked respectable. They got blown out against Notre Dame. This is a coin flip game for me. I don't have an opinion here.
I do lean with BC, even though they're -1.5. And you could go back to the fact that it's the first time Boston College has been favored over Florida State and say, whoa. But then let's go back to the NC State game a couple weeks back. It was the first time NC State had been favored over Florida State. End result, 47-28, right. All NC State, just dominate them. And the thing with Florida State is as good as their defense has been all year, starting to wear down a little bit. Notre Dame gashed them for 7.3 yards per carry. NC State ran the ball for 177 yards on them. And while A.J. Dillon's not 100%, won't be 100% the rest of the year, they still have one of the best offensive lines in the country. Brown got injured last week, but E.J. Perry's a good athlete. He's got 4.5 speed, and probably they'll run more option, knowing that he's there, and I think you'll see that worked in more. It's tough to take, when your quarterback goes out on the first series like it did against Clemson, you don't really have the game plan set up for E.J. Perry because
exactly
Perry's
what
a different type of quarterback. Now
they
have the entire week, and I get the feeling that Brown may play, may not play. Adazio says he's semi-hopeful he'll play, but at least he'll work on it during the week. And I think you'll see Perry execute that. BC's got a legitimate defense, no doubt about it. If not for that punt return touchdown by Clemson, then they only allow 20 points to the Tigers. So with the defense, the fact that BC's playing a lot better, and I don't think it's going to be a rabid Florida State home crowd. Let's face it, they could turn into boo birds in the second quarter. I would take BC -1.5 there.
I said that it's like with such a contrast in playing style. You really need a week of practice and have things lined up to make that quarterback switch when it's such a contrast. So I thought BC was in a tough spot there, but it's a lean card for me in terms of what I like. Maybe I'm overthinking it a bit. You're trying to limp into the finish line here.
Yeah, well, actually, this is probably the worst weekend because this is a week where you have so many huge favorites in flat spots with big games on deck.
And but that's okay. Every ticket cash is the same. I'm okay with, look, I'll bet NFL preseason if I have an angle. It's all about finding the value or the inefficiency, whatever you want to call it. But I just don't have a good feel for these games. That's my problem.
I'll throw out a game with a big line on you might want to take a look at. And it's a game in the American Conference. Not a lot of folks are going to look at, and they're probably going to look at the line and say, what the heck is East Carolina giving 17 points to anybody for? Because they're a two-win team. UConn is bad this year. And UConn's coming off a game where they were at home against SMU. and it was cold weather. You're on the East Coast. SMU jumped out to a big lead, 31-10, and then Connecticut got the cover. They only lost by 12. They have been running the ball better down the stretch. I'll give them that. But defensively, I mean, they're giving their opponents 188 yards above their season average. And what a frustrating year for East Carolina. I mean, East Carolina is so much better than their 2-7 record would indicate. You go back to the game against USF. They had a 24-9 first down edge against USF. They looked like the better team. If you didn't know which one was which, you would have thought East Carolina was the 14-point favorite in that game. Then they played Houston and played a good game. UCF, they were down by two scores, tried to jump pass in the end zone, got returned for a touchdown, then they gave up a late score. They didn't lose that game by 27 points. In fact, they outgained UCF. Memphis, also a close game in the fourth quarter, ended up losing by 18, and then Tulane, a tough six-point loss last week. So they've been so much better than the record. They're at home in their home finale. They'll take Connecticut seriously, and I like EC to win this one by more than the 17.
All right, so you're going to lay the wood with a two-win team.
Yes, and like I said, they're not your typical two-win team.
Right.
I've watched them almost every week of the season closely, and they're actually outgaining their opponents by 22 yards per game this year. How many two-win teams can you say that about?
None. Phil, we overlooked a huge game. I can't believe game day's not there, frankly, in Piscataway. Rutgers, fresh off Kai's cover. Not quite the money line.
Oh,
the money line didn't cash. But the Rutgers did get the cover last week against the Wolverines. Kai, you like your Scarlet Knights here, catching 27 at home against Penn State?
For some reason, I thought you were going to talk about Syracuse. You know what? That was tough last week to watch. And
nail biter, 42-7.
Yeah. The first play.
That's good early.
The 80-yard TD gave me a little bit of false hope, but, you know.
Didn't someone tweet us a picture of, like, win probability, and when it was 7-7 in the at that juncture, it still said 0%?
Smart computer.
Needless to say, I probably will not be watching the game this week.
Do you like them plus the points? You think it's you were looking at Michigan's flat spot. You kind of nailed it with the points.
Yeah, gave up
a touchdown early, probably a lackadaisical effort, if you will, on the Wolverines to even allow that.
Right.
They've covered three straight as Rutgers. Thoughts? No.
I got nothing.
Kai's back into his turtle shell after puffing
out
his chest.
You know what? Kai's retiring at 1-0, and he's taking that home with him.
That's right.
I don't know about 1-0, Phil. He was thinking about throwing some cheddar there on the money line. I think we're going to get one and a half a loss there.
I would have booked that bet for you, Kyrie. Yeah. So next time you're thinking about that, give me a call.
Yeah, I'll talk it through with you next time.
Well, that's about it. I gotta hit the drawing board there, because there has been lines. Like, I'd be on Maryland in that spot at 17, but not 14.5 or 14. I do like Minnesota still at +2. There's some just wonky games. I just don't have a good feel for a lot of these games, but I do like Cincinnati as well. I mentioned them earlier. We talked about that. I do like Cincinnati. So those are the things I'm thinking about. Maybe East Carolina is going to make an appearance. We'll see, Phil.
You know, I think the concern I have with your Maryland play is that, first of all, Kasim Hill is out for Maryland. And then their top running back, Ty Johnson, got banged up last week. And with Ohio State, there's so much focus on stopping the run. As we've talked about with Maryland, if you stop the run, you stop Maryland. Iowa held them to 68 yards, Michigan State to 26. Michigan shut them down much worse than the 42-21. Temple shut them down as well. I thought Ohio State played better. Now, the scary part with Ohio State, they give up big plays. So I can see Anthony McFarland breaking off a big play. But I just think Ohio State needs to be playing better by the time they walk into Michigan. So I don't know if this is your typical Ohio State sleepwalk through it. You're thinking ahead to Michigan. They need, if they walk into this current form into Michigan, they're going to get whipped next week. So I think they need to play better. I don't know if I would like Maryland plus the points this week.
Well, I don't think they're very good. Like, that's the thing. They need to play better. You're right. I don't know if they can. Like, I think on paper they have some horses, but I don't think quarterback play is particularly strong. I think their defense is weak, especially since losing Bosa. Like, what do you make of the advanced line? Like, I like Michigan -3.5, even at the horseshoe.
I would take Michigan right now. There's no doubt about it. I'd take Michigan against most teams in the country.
Right.
They're playing with legitimate revenge. You look, I mean, they've been blown. They're beaten in this series. But in reality, they've played Ohio State pretty good. Remember the last time they came to the Shoe? That thing goes to overtime. And
yeah, the fourth down spot, they should have won maybe, or at least Wolverines fans.
They feel they beat them. Michigan fans feel they won that game. And so that was not this year's Michigan team. This year's Michigan team is the best by far Harbaugh's put on the field. This year's Ohio State team is one of the weaker Ohio State teams that you've seen recently. So, yeah, I would take Michigan right now minus the 3.5. Now, we'll see if Ohio State can get it going this week. But if they don't get it going this week, then you really wonder what possible chance they have in that game.
Well, I think Michigan wins kind of comfortably, double digits, because they're
At this point.
And let's call it what it is. There's a circus right now with Urban Meyer, given recent reports and reports all throughout the season. And that's not conducive to winning.
Yeah, and they need to run the football better, and they need to stop giving up all these daggone big plays. And if they could do that, Dwayne Haskins is hitting 69% with a 33-6 ratio. So the stats are there, but you're right. He hasn't been overly impressive when you want to see him impressive so far this year. But that's because teams are able to probably drop a few guys back more in coverage with Ohio State's inability to run the ball.
And look, it was a nice cover. You and I were both on the Buckeyes. But let's be honest. If you want to talk real talk here, they had five punts inside the 6-yard line for Michigan State. The punter was the MVP of last week's game. So that final score and the margin was not really indicative of how close that game was, in my opinion. Now, look, I had Ohio State. I liked it, and the Buckeyes got there. But this was all about the punter pinning Sparty back, and this game could have easily gone a different way.
No, I agree with you 100%. That was my thought the second the game ended, or even during the game. It's like, really, Ohio State's winning by that much? Because they sure aren't dominating. And as you mentioned, Chrisman pinned him inside the 5-yard line or 6-yard line five times. They got a safety off of that. They got a touchdown off of that. They got a short drive off of that. So 17 of their 26 points were delivered basically by the punter.
Yeah, just to put it in perspective, Mark D'Antonio was so confident in his defense. With his team down one, third and 10 on his own one, he took an intentional safety to go down three rather than punt to a short field and basically put Ohio State in field goal position right away, because if he safety kicked off, at least he put it on the other side of the field. He was that confident he could stop Ohio State's offense and keep it a field goal game instead of a 4-point game. So it's just indicative of how that the game flow was going. And the under got there on some live bets. I think it landed 30-ish, 31. So I just don't read too much in the Ohio State convincing win sort of box score, if you will.
Oh, it definitely was not. But I will say this, once again, going back to the Maryland play, Michigan State held Maryland to 100 yards and gained 356 on them. So Michigan State, a lot better defense than Maryland has.
Right. But that was also in 30-mile-per-hour winds. So, like, the passing game was limited in that Maryland-Michigan State game.
Yes.
Okay. All right, bud. Always good catching up. Let's stay hot. What do you say?
Sounds good, Doug. Knock them dead this weekend. Once again, you're on quite a roll this year.
All right, we'll try. We'll try. It's a full team effort.
Stop. Hammer time.
All right, thanks to Phil for his analysis, breakdown of games. And straight ahead, Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network has some plays as well. We'll reconnect with him, talk a little college hoops, and also some NFL picks as well. He has two on the slate, and we'll catch John Murray after that. So a loaded pod here. Murray's coming up as well as Matt Eumanns straight ahead. Let's now head out to Las Vegas and bring in a friend of the program, Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network. Matt, you've been on the podcast a couple times this season. Appreciate the insight. We're going to get you back on as well to talk college, pro, and even a little college hoops as well.
Hey, Doug, it's great to be back on. What happened? Did John Murray cancel? Or why'd you call me today?
Murray's big timing all of us, isn't he? You know, he's now a director at the Superbook, going to executive meetings, and pretty soon he's going to walk past us in a casino in a suit and not even recognize us, and or at least acknowledge that he knows us.
That could happen by next week. Yeah, that could happen very soon. John Murray is big time. There's no question about it.
And he's getting quoted in the New York Post in some gambling articles. What's up with that?
I've quoted John Murray several times, and at VSIN we have a deal with the New York Post, and I usually write a story for the Post on Tuesdays. We put a lot of best bets, things like that, in the Post, and John's very, very quotable. You know, there's some sportsbook directors who are, or, you know, odds makers, if you want to call them that, are kind of dry. Murray's got a lot of personality. He's very sharp. I actually think in a short amount of time, just being serious, he's elevating his stature in this industry to where he's one of the more recognizable people, one of the more respected opinions.
I agree. I've known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to hang out with people that either entertain you through humor, entertain you through stimulation of information or knowledge. But he's always been a dude who's been very sharp. And I think he's done a great job in the ability to present that information in an entertaining way on air, whether it be radio, TV, whatnot. Not an easy thing to do. I mean, Jimmy Vaccaro sets the bar very high for many decades, and slowly but surely other bookmakers across town have polished their on-air delivery in a nice way, and Murray's one of those as well.
You know what? Jimmy Vaccaro is a Hall of Famer, Doug. We both know him well. I don't think anybody in the industry can ever surpass Jimmy Vaccaro as a character and a storyteller.
I completely agree with you, Matt. I don't think he's just a... He's a Hall of Fame broadcaster across the board, regardless of bookmaking. Jimmy is one of a kind. So let's jump into college football first. Let's start where game day is, Orlando, Central Florida, hosting Cincinnati. I was on the Bearcats last week, got shoestring tackled. It burned me. Phil Steele and I were talking about it earlier in the podcast. But this Cincy team is strong, and you like the dog here.
You know, I do like the dog in this game. I sense this is a game where we could see an upset. Obviously, UCF has a 22-game win streak, so it's going to be difficult for Cincinnati to pull this off. But when I look at the top surprise teams in college football, Washington State, number one, Cincinnati, number two. Luke Fickell has done a phenomenal job, and he's got this team at 9-1 right now. You go back to the win at the Rose Bowl to open the season against Chip Kelly. And, you know, it was kind of an eye-opener for a lot of people in two ways. One, that UCLA was really bad and that Cincinnati could be pretty good. Now, we get to this point in November, and I actually think his team is peaking right about now. Cincinnati was the right side last week, should have covered. And Cincinnati, I think, will be the right side in this game, getting 7.5. If you look at these teams, UCF's weakness is obviously on the defensive side of the football. 2 weeks ago, allowed 670 yards and a 52-40 victory over Temple. The offense behind McKenzie Milton averaging 44.2 points. So it's all offense, not much defense with UCF. With the Bearcats, they rank 7th in the nation in scoring defense, allowing 14.9 per game. They have a workhorse running back, Michael Warren, was over 1,000 yards, gets 17 touchdowns. What you have to do against UCF is run the ball, control the clock, keep that offense off the field, out of rhythm. And Cincinnati, I think, has a formula to make that happen. And rarely, Doug, will I talk about common opponents and score comparisons. But it just kind of exhibits how these teams are playing, I think, right now. Cincinnati beat Navy 42-0 2 weeks ago. Last week, UCF struggled to get by Navy 35-24. So I think the 7.5 is something worth taking here with Cincinnati. ESPN's pregame show, obviously the circus rolls into town in Orlando, cranks up the hype. I think UCF's players kind of, you know, feel the pressure in a sense, you know, in settings like that. And, the Bearcats can come in loose. They're the dogs, and I think the Bearcats have a shot to pull off the upset.
Yeah, definitely can see the Central Florida players playing tight in that scenario unfolding given game days in town. You like another dog, this one in L.A., opposite coast. UCLA, I would prefer DTR to play, but it sounds like Wilton Spate's the guy with Chip Kelly, and you like him, the Bruins, catching 3.5 against USC.
You know, I've talked about Dorian Thompson-Robinson on your podcast early in the season. I like the kid a lot. I think he's got the potential to be one of the better quarterbacks in college football in the next couple of years. Chip Kelly, I believe, right now is going with Wilton Spate, Michigan transfer, because he's a veteran quarterback, doesn't make many mistakes, and he knows what he's going to get from Spate. He really doesn't know what he's going to get from DTR. who has a much higher ceiling. I wouldn't be surprised if both quarterbacks play in this game. Who knows? Spate was, I thought, pretty good last week against Arizona State. He passed for 335 and two TDs. The Bruins were competitive in that game. They lost 31-28. I was on UCLA in that game catching 13. And they were with the Sun Devils the entire way. And I thought that, you know, I really thought Chip Kelly was going to get this team to play much better in the month of November. We didn't see many signs of that in that blowout loss to Utah at the Rose Bowl. But I think we started to see it last week, and I believe we're going to see it this week against USC. This is really Bruins' bowl game at the Rose Bowl this week, without question. Chip Kelly's 2-8. He's got to be a little bit embarrassed about the way this has gone, kind of like John Gruden with the Raiders. But, you know, if you can beat your rival, you can beat USC. You got something you can hang your hat on. It helps in recruiting. I think he's going to put a lot into this game. I expect Chip Kelly to kind of empty the clip on the Trojans this week, and we'll see if that's enough. But Clay Helton could be a dead man walking here. He's 7-18 against the spread in his past 25 games. I've said all season I think JT Daniels is an overhyped freshman quarterback. He looked in over his head again last week against that Cal defense. Obviously, the Cal defense is way, way above what the UCLA defense has to offer at this point. But you got to wonder how inspired this USC team is with the sense that, you know, Clay Helton might be coaching his final couple games here at USC. It just looks like one of those cases of teams heading in opposite directions. Give me UCLA plus 3.5.
You know, I do vividly remember earlier this year when you talked about UCLA saying you thought there'd be some good spots at the end of the year when Chip Kelly's coaching can really come into full effect. I guess this, here we are coming full circle on the Behind the Bets podcast. Another close spread, Michigan State and Nebraska. This game in Lincoln, and the Huskers catching some points here. You like the home dog?
I was a little bit surprised by this line, and I talked to a really sharp professional gambler in Vegas about this last night. He likes Nebraska in this game as well, and I said, I thought Nebraska was going to open as a one-point favorite. And he said, well, you know, the betting market just doesn't know, understand yet or accept how good Nebraska has become here in the past 4 or 5 weeks. And he had no hesitation or reluctance to back Nebraska in this spot. You know, I just based on matchups and the way these teams are playing, I really like Nebraska in this game. I'm curious that I see some, why I see some money coming in on the Michigan State side. That does concern me a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and play it. And if you look at the Cornhuskers, Scott Frost lost his first 6 games, but you can see signs that team is going to break through. And I've been betting Nebraska pretty consistently on the second half of the season. They've scored 30 points or more in 5 straight games, have topped 450 yards of total offense in 7 straight games, averaging 538 during that stretch. I really think when the Heisman Trophy odds go up for next season, if Adrian Martinez is somewhere, 50 to 1 range, I'm just guessing, take a flyer on this guy. Scott Frost is going to turn him into a Heisman candidate here in the next year or two. He's got 2,200 yards passing. He's top 50 yards rushing in 6 games. You got Divine Ozigbo, the running back, 235-pound wrecking ball. He's got about 1,000 yards on the season. This Nebraska offense has become really impressive over the past 6 weeks. However, Cornhuskers have one of the Big Ten's worst defenses. Michigan State's got one of the best defenses in the country. Allowed 19.7 points per game, top 20 scoring defense. That makes this the another cliche, a clash of contrasting styles here, but that's exactly what you got. I really think the Michigan State offense misses L.J. Scott. He was kind of like their Le'Veon Bell this season. He only played in 4 games. He's got an ankle injury. He's going to redshirt. Brian Lewerke, the veteran quarterback, has got a sore right shoulder. Looks like Rocky Lombardi is going to get the start in Lincoln this week. Lombardi's tough, but he's kind of raw. He doesn't have much experience. He's not really a precision passer. I don't think they can, expose the Nebraska secondary with Rocky Lombardi throwing the ball. You know, it's not a very good spot for the Spartans either. They just, lost that home game to Ohio State 26-6. Couldn't get any offense going. Now you hit the road, catch a team in Nebraska that's fired up, playing its best football of the season, And Mark D'Antonio, even though it's only a couple points, he is 2-9 against the spread in his past 11 as a road favorite. I recall talking on your podcast early in the season about playing Arizona State as a home dog against Michigan State and Tempe, and D'Antonio was flat in that spot as a home favorite. I think Nebraska gets the win here. I really like the way this team is playing. I'm surprised by the line, but give me Nebraska plus 2 or 2.5.
Yeah, you mentioned that the Nebraska defense has not been strong, but this quarterback play of Sparty has just been shaky at best. Obviously, the injury to Lewerke, and Rocky's a nice guy to watch, but he's all over the place. He's young. He's emotional. He's fired up. It's fun to watch, but not exactly reliable and consistent play there. Any other college before we get to pro?
You know, I've got a lot of college games I'm looking at right now. One more I'm going to play is Indiana plus 28.5. I was waiting for that number to tick up from 28. Basically, Doug, it's a spot play. We all know what Michigan and Ohio State have on deck. Biggest game of the season for each team. I think the Wolverines get a lead here, let off the gas, and start looking towards their trip to Columbus next week. And not only that, Indiana's had some success covering in this series against Michigan in recent years. I don't think you're going to get a focused Michigan team. I'll take Indiana plus 28.5 with a look-ahead spot for the Wolverines.
I'm really high on Michigan in the look-ahead line of 3.5 at the Horseshoe over Ohio State. Where do you stand on that one?
I'm not really sure what to make of it right now. I'll tell you the truth, when the games of the year lines move so much to where it is currently, that always concerns me a little bit. You go back to Michigan-Notre Dame to open the season, right? Chris Andrews at the South Point in Las Vegas puts up Notre Dame -7. It gets bet all the way to Michigan -3. And what happens? Notre Dame's up 14-0 early, wins the game. I just get a little bit concerned when you look at Ohio State. You know, the projected game of the year line was Buckeyes -7. And now you're talking about Michigan -3.5. There's no bargain there laying 3.5 with Michigan. I love this Michigan team. I've been talking it up since the summer. But, you know, you're not stealing anything here laying 3.5 with the Wolverines in Columbus.
Yeah, I guess playing devil's advocate, the difference between this one and that week one game was that there's actually data points of games versus just line movement and power ratings, you know, all that. I just feel like this Ohio State team has been a circus with the Urban Meyer fiasco and all the headlines off the field, and they're just not very good, not just on defense, but, like, I don't think their offense is as potent as we once thought.
No, it's not. And I agree with what you said. I mean, that's why Michigan is a 3.5-point favorite.
Right, that's why it's a 10.5-point move, yeah. No, I know. It's just interesting. And, you know, you, Murray, a lot of people have been on this Michigan bandwagon after that week one loss because the talent is there, the defense is certainly there, and they've been just steamrolling some opponents in their path. And that narrative of you can't beat the rivals, well, like that block punt situation from a couple years ago at Michigan State, the spot on fourth down with Ohio State a couple years ago. I mean, this is not a Jim Harbaugh guy who forgot how to coach. So it's a very misleading record, as I think you've mentioned on the podcast and others have. And they obviously crushed Michigan State this year. They crushed other teams. I just think they're very focused and they're all business right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I've been a big Michigan fan all season, I've not been a Harbaugh critic necessarily. I know a lot of people just love to pile on when you lose some big games. And you're not hearing so much of that now that Michigan has avenged a lot of those defeats and beat down, just really beat down teams like Penn State and Wisconsin, you know, and Michigan State. So I can't wait to see that game next week. I think Michigan wins it, but I did not play it early in the season, and I just don't think playing 3.5 right now is a bargain.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's go to the NFL. A team you've mentioned and a guy you've mentioned already in the pod is John Gruden and the Raiders, and you're looking to fade them this week.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to be alone in that regard either. We've seen this number tick up from 3.5 to 4. This is one game I bet early in the week because I knew this number was going to go up, and I actually see 4.5 at the Westgate now and a 5 out there on the screen. And yesterday, you know, at this time, there were plenty of 3.5s out there. But, Doug, I mentioned to you, this is a must-lose game for the Raiders. And you don't hear that term often, but that's exactly what it is. If John Gruden's going to totally strip this thing down and try to get the number one draft pick, you have to get the number one draft pick if you're going to go through a miserable type of season where you go 1-15 or 2-14. You cannot afford to beat a team like Arizona that's 2-7 and in competition for that number one pick. It makes no sense to win a game like this. And, you know, that's what it comes down to for me is motivation here. The Raiders should have none. They have a toxic situation in their locker room right now. You've got reports that veteran players are saying, you know, I don't want to be here. I got to get out of here. And on the Arizona side, you got a coach fighting for his job. Steve Wilks is definitely fighting for his job. He made a smart move a couple of weeks ago. He dumped offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, who I always felt was way too conservative. He puts Byron Leftwich in that spot. And if you pay attention to what Leftwich has done here the past couple of weeks, he's rediscovered David Johnson. He had 98 yards on 21 carries, 7 receptions, 85 yards last week in that loss at KC. That was an 8-point loss. I thought the Cards showed a lot of positive signs there. I do not really like Josh Rosen. I think he's another Jay Cutler clone, a guy who doesn't have a fierce competitive drive, kind of has that, you know, I don't give a damn attitude. Yes, he does have a nice arm, throws a pretty good ball, but I'm not high on Rosen. But the point here in this game is that you have a franchise quarterback, so the Cardinals aren't trying to lose. They don't really care that much about the number one pick. They have the franchise quarterback. They have a coach fighting for his job. And on the flip side, you have a team that has nothing to play for, needs to lose this game, and I think it makes a lot of sense to delay the short number with the Cards here. The only way the Cardinals don't cover this is if Josh Rosen makes mistakes and hands it to the Raiders. If you look at the trends, the Raiders are 4-16-3 against the spread in their past 23. They are 1-9-2 in their past 12 away from home. I think it's really difficult, Doug, to make a case for the Raiders.
I agree, and someone brought this up to me. There are 7 games left of the Raiders. Just fade them every week. And do you really think they're going to cover 4 of their final 7? I don't.
No, actually, we were talking about that before they went to London, and John Gruden made those comments about how he didn't want to fly to London. And I said, you should probably bet against this team every week the rest of the year, and you're not going to lose. You're not going to lose money. You know, you're going to come out ahead because they might cover 2 or 3 games, and some spots could be a fluke. But they're not going to cover more. They're not going to have a winning spread record the rest of the year. And I'm not sure if the Raiders win another game. They probably will by accident cover, you know, in a couple spots. But, yes, it makes more sense to bet against the Raiders.
And the nice thing is if they keep covering, then there'll be some market correction. So you'll get an extra point or two. And I talk about that with Alabama in the first half as well. Like, if Alabama comes out flat, well, maybe not Citadel, but let's go back to 4 or 5 weeks ago. You know Saban's going to maximize the output of this team the next week. It's just a luxury you have when you have a coach like that. And in this situation, it's a luxury you have of a team that's essentially trying to lose and is dysfunctional.
You know, we talk about it all the time. I know you talk about it with NBA teams and tanking, you know, in the second half of the season. The Raiders are tanking. And I don't see value in taking a short number with a team like that.
All right, another game you like is a dog on the Sunday night game. Why the Vikings plus 3 here?
And this number has dropped from 3 to 2.5 in a lot of spots.
Right.
Still grab
trickling.
3, and
it's
I did
trickling.
Vikings. You know, you watch the screen, and you can see which way the number's headed in this game, so you had to grab the 3 with Vikings right away. What it is for me is a role reversal situation, and that, you know, that's what this play comes down to for me. The Vikings, suddenly underdogs. They were preseason favorites to win the division. Now they're catching points on the road against the Bears, who just stopped a 10-game division losing streak and have been at the bottom of this division for a long time. All of a sudden, the Bears are in the favorites role on Sunday night. I like to bet against teams in spots like that. Also, if you look at the Vikings side, before the bye, they had won 4 of 5, and Mike Zimmer made some adjustments to the defense that really worked. I thought they were playing much better football going into the bye. That Sunday night loss to the Saints was a little deceiving because that fumble by Adam Thielen really turned that game around. So you have a Vikings team that's won 4 of 5, losing only to the Saints, coming out of the bye and much healthier. Looks like Dalvin Cook's going to be on the field, and Kirk Cousins needs that ground threat that he hadn't had consistently this season. I think a lot of things set up here for a pretty good play on the Vikings plus 3.
Yeah, that is a crazy. It was an all-time bad beat if you had the Vikings in the first half, up three with the ball approaching the red zone, final couple minutes, and then it's a fumble and scoop and all the way down, and just a brutal, brutal swing there. All right, man, something we've talked about a lot on the pod over the last year is your, you know, experience handicapping college basketball as well. You're my go-to guy in a lot of ways on this front. So here we have Duke storming out of the gates, look like world beaters in the opener, but there's a lot of other basketball going on. What can we look at? I mean, first of all, if you like any plays tonight, get to that. But what else? What are some sort of macro takeaways we can apply moving forward?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I did so much research in college hoops before the season. I read the Blue Ribbon Yearbook basically cover to cover. You got 351 Division I teams, and I've probably done work, you know, on 320 of those. And I continue to do research and watch these teams and read on these teams every day. So you're constantly learning. You can't think that when the season tips off, hey, I know everything, because that's not the case. You're learning every day throughout the season about these teams. What I learned about Duke on opening night was that those freshmen, Zion Williamson and all four of those top 10 freshmen, are even better than I thought they were. You know, I knew they were good, but they're even better than I thought. So I had to adjust my rankings, obviously. You blow out Kentucky 118-84. How impressive is that? I mean, it was basically looked like the Globetrotters against the Washington Generals. And you're doing that to a John Calipari team? Come on. That's the most impressive season opener I've seen, you know, in the past 30-some years of watching college hoops. But Duke is not going to be that good every night, obviously, so you don't want to overreact. I did, halfway through that game, I did take Duke at 5-1 to win the whole thing because I knew that 5-1 was going to disappear by the next morning. And I think you tweeted about that either that night or the next morning, how the Westgate immediately adjusted, you know, the futures number on Duke. So you knew the 5-1 was not going to last. I still think there are teams that can give Duke a run for the money here when you're looking at Kansas, incredibly deep and talented. Kentucky's going to get its act together by March. We'll be there. Watch out for Gonzaga. You know, Killian Tilly is out right now. It's a guy who made 11 straight threes in the West Coast Conference tournament. I think he hit 13 of 14 threes in that tournament. He is out for the first 2 months. So Gonzaga is going to probably drop a couple games. In fact, Gonzaga is going to be in Maui next week, Doug, and I'm heading out to Maui to watch some games at the Maui Invitational. And looking forward to seeing Gonzaga. Before the season, I had Kentucky rated number one, power rated number one, Gonzaga number two, and Duke number three. I quickly adjusted Duke to number one. I had to drop Gonzaga all the way to seven without Killian Tilly. And I think if they lose a couple games without Tilly, and you can find the Zags somewhere, I'm going to say 12-1 or, you know, even something better, that's worth a play on the futures board because that team, that's the best team I think Mark Few's had. Obviously, he reached the championship game a couple of years ago. This team is very comparable, and Gonzaga is loaded, and I love that team. But, you know, when you're looking at tonight's card and looking at last night's card, there are so many – that's why I think college basketball is the best sport to bet. And I talked about this a lot with Nick Bogdanovich, you know, the William Hill sportsbook director who played college hoops up in Idaho. He loves to bet this. You look at this board every night, and there are going to be numbers. There are going to be some bad numbers on the board because there are so many games.
There has
so
to be, teams. Right? There has to be. The sheer volume.
So many teams and, you know, games that slip under the radar that, you know, maybe odds makers don't know about. So you and I traded messages yesterday about one of those games. It was Stephen F. Austin at Miami. And I was reading on Stephen F. Austin before the season. I followed its first couple games. Obviously, the Lumberjacks are getting away from the Brad Underwood era. They're starting to slip a little bit. And I looked at their last game, and I was like, what is this? Stephen F. Austin played Southwest Assemblies of God. I didn't even know that existed. The Southwest Assemblies of God Lions took the game to the buzzer, and Stephen F. Austin won the game by 1 point at the buzzer. You can't tell me that's not a bad sign. And they go to Miami catching 14 last night, and I said, you got to lay the points at Miami. You know, I don't like to play big favorites, but I look at that, and I say, that's got to be a mismatch. It's going to be a blowout. Miami ends up winning the game by about 35 last night. So there are a lot of spots like that on the college basketball board. You're not going to hit them all. Sometimes you're going to be wrong. Tonight, the game I'm most looking forward to is Marquette at Indiana. And I'm really high on Indiana this season. I think Archie Miller has got a team that could contend for the Big Ten title. I really believe that. Indiana's got one of the stronger home courts if you do ratings on college hoops. I made the number 5. It's 5.5, so obviously there's not a lot of edge there. But Marquette's a better shooting team. I'm really interested to see that game tonight, but no play is really jumping off the page for me in college hoops tonight, Doug.
That's okay. It's good stuff. I mean, look, like you said, it's every night, and if you know your stuff, even if you know just one conference, you're going to catch some inefficiencies, at least perceived inefficiencies in the market. And it can be an ACC conference. It doesn't have to be the MAC or whatever. But college basketball, that's why people love it so much. And I think there's an element of, hey, a large part of the country is stuck indoors during the winter, and you want to fire on some games. And, you know, football only comes around once a week. So we got college hoops January, February, and it's a lot of fun as well.
It is, and looking forward to going to Maui next week to watch a couple games out there. And every night, college hoops. I mean, the board is so big, and I'm sure, you know, throughout the season, you're going to have a lot of guests on to talk college basketball. It's just, I love it because there are so many games out there every night. You know, it's there are so many opportunities over the course of a season if you really study college hoops. You know, you can't force plays, and that's bad in anything you do. You don't want to force too many, but every once in a while, there's going to be some that just jump right out off that board at you when you look at it the night before, and that's what I love about college basketball. It is my favorite sport to bet. So,
all right, bud,
back on the podcast, man. Great talking with you.
Yeah, you too. Good to have you back on, and good luck today, tonight, Maui. Safe travels, and we'll get you back on here sooner than later.
Okay, you bet. Thanks.
All right, thanks to Matt, and John Murray will join us momentarily for some picks behind the counter. But first, a message from one of our sponsors. Holidays are near, gentlemen. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. Remember, November is Black Friday season, meaning 2018's lowest prices, up to 70% off everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage. Make an entrance. Take center stage. Your biggest moment, grand finale, etc. This week, listeners can take advantage of Black Friday pricing by using the code BEHINDTHEBETS at checkout. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BEHINDTHEBETS for up to 70% off. Incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys that work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
I think we need to change that open, Kai. We need to change it. Hey, please hold for John Murray because he is big-timing us. Always jammed with requests and meetings, yeah. And you know, barely has time for us little people now.
There's a lot going on around here, I can tell you guys that much, but I always have time for ESPN, Doug. Come on.
I don't know. I was just talking about it with Matt Eumanns on the pod. You're sought after out there, a lot of radio shows, a lot of platforms, yeah. And then obviously the suits want to bend your ear as well.
True, but I did make time. I talked to Matt for a story he was writing on Sunday night. So, I mean, I always make time. I always make time.
Yeah, New York Post, I guess, gets deference.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I mean, I'm always going to make time for guys like you and Matt Eumanns. Come on.
Well, because it all started in a hot tub.
Yeah, no, the ESPN, of course, is always a priority here, and the guys here know that, and all the executives are very appreciative of our great relationship with ESPN.
How did we do last week at the Sharp Place? 4-1? Do I have that correct? I'm sorry, hold on.
I don't
on.
Remember.
You had like 9 plays.
I don't think it was that good. I think that there was one push in there. There were a few losses in there. I think it was more like a 500-type weekend.
Yeah, I was looking at the wrong notes. I apologize. So Boise State got there on Friday night. Yeah. That was a crazy game. Charlotte, a team that you had mentioned, a lot of sharp action and had been performing well against the number, did not cover. But Mississippi State, you got the old middle. Did the house get middled there?
It wasn't a great number for us where it landed, but we did okay on that game. We didn't win on the first half, though. The first half we lost, of course.
How about that? 21-0.
Yeah, that
Mississippi
was...
State scores essentially 2 touchdowns, both get nullified by a penalty, questionable penalty.
Yeah, I think actually there was a house player that did lay bet Mississippi State towards the end, so I don't think it was a big loss. But we're trying to win when Alabama doesn't cover the first half. It has to eventually happen, no? I mean, it has to happen at some point this year.
No, it doesn't. No, it does not. Question for you.
We thought it had to.
When did this first half handle start taking? Like, when did you really start getting some momentum in terms of action on the first half Alabama?
It's not like it was about the second or third week of the year. Guys were starting to recognize the trend, and players don't like laying those huge point spreads that much, so they were just going with the first half instead of the game.
I'm thinking Oklahoma first half could be the play this week against Kansas. Just flat spot for KU coming off that K-State demoralizing loss, and Sooners kind of just need to get in and get out of this game before next week.
What do you think of this Fox doubleheader we get this week? We got Indiana at Michigan, and then we have Kansas at Oklahoma. It's a hell of a doubleheader there.
Oof. Well, at least Indiana-Michigan's a close spread.
Oh, yeah, only 4 touchdowns. Yeah, the college football card this weekend really isn't very good. It's not a particularly
terrible.
Strong. I think it's
terrible.
There's so many good games next week. It looks like they put all their eggs in the basket of next week's games, and this is pretty ugly, man. There's a lot of really big point spreads, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but a lot of the sharper plays I've seen have been guys taking huge numbers on some of these really big point spread games.
As the dog, you mean?
Yeah, the dogs, yes. I should clarify that.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you're not going to go 4-0 laying a combined, 140 points. Right? You got to like take.
You wouldn't think so, but I can remember the duffel bag boy had a 3-team parlay this year where he was laying cumulatively 100 points. I'm not sure if you remember that one. But that was a funny one. I don't think he won that one, by the way.
Yeah, I think that was a whiskey on a Friday night that did not get there.
Yeah, that's a good memory. I think that's exactly what it was. But we got a few pretty ugly dogs this week, some really big point spreads, and some of them have come down, but some of them are still pretty much in the vicinity of where these guys were betting them at.
All right, well, let's go through the sexy dogs that are getting a lot of points.
Well, you just mentioned Oklahoma, Kansas. We can start right there. Yep. We had a guy, a good college group. They took Kansas plus 36.5. I can see where they're coming from there. That Oklahoma defense is brutal.
Oh, yeah.
They were fortunate that they were able to get that win on Saturday against Oklahoma State. Their defense is pretty poor, and I think it'll probably end up keeping them out of the college football playoff.
Possibly, and I certainly couldn't blame the committee if they pointed to that defense. It's funny, everyone raves about Oklahoma State going for the 2, and they talk about, I love Okie State going for the win. It's like there was a minute to go. Yeah, we could have 3 touchdowns with those 2 teams.
Oh, yeah.
In the final minute.
Oklahoma probably, the game is not over there. I'm on your side for sure. Oklahoma could have absolutely gone down the field and scored after that. But
which is why the which is why the analytics guys say it's not smart to go for 2 with a minute to go. It should only be about with 30 seconds or less in that situation.
That's interesting.
If OU has timeouts.
Field goal.
Right, because the risk reward.
Field goal.
Right, so even if you get it, you don't guarantee a win. Like, go back to the London game with Tennessee and LA Chargers. When there's only a few seconds left, yes, because it makes sense to go for it from a probability situation because if you get right. the two, you win. However, with a minute to go and you go for two, which is a risky, you know, we think 50%, but maybe with these offenses, maybe it's higher, obviously. And but the negative is like, you know, you're going to lose, right? It's an onside kick away. But the positive is all you do is force Oklahoma to go like 40 yards with a minute and two timeouts. So that's why it does not make sense from a permutation standpoint than it would be if there were like 20 seconds left in the game.
Oh, that makes sense. That's very interesting. I hadn't considered that exact scenario, but when you say it like that, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. Like if there was 10 minutes to go, right? You don't say Okie State's going for the win. So,
no.
So you have to find the tipping point when it could be classified as going for the win. And depending on how much timeouts, obviously college is different than NFL because the clock stops and on first down. So things like that. And then obviously a game with these two defenses for Kyler Murray to go 40 yards in 30 seconds, he can do it in one play. And with two timeouts,
right.
That's why. So that's why I didn't like it. But I liked, I don't know, the concept of it being aggressive and trying to win instead of just stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but that definitely is another take on it that's interesting. But it was a lot of drama here, I can tell you that much. We actually had a lot of money on Oklahoma State money line. If Oklahoma State had won that game outright, that would have really hurt us.
Interesting. All right, what other sharp plays?
Yeah. Well, let's go with one tonight because I know how much you love the week. We had a pretty sharp group laid Ohio minus the 2 points. This was on Monday. And now you see Ohio's minus 3 here at the Superbook, playing against the Buffalo Bulls. Buffalo is 9-1. They're having an absolutely incredible year. And we've seen some sharp money come in on Ohio, but the ticket count is very slanted to Buffalo right now. It's about the neighborhood of about 4-1 tickets on Buffalo. I love these games, man, because if this game was on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., there'd be no money in the pool. But because it's tonight and it's on national TV and there's nothing else to watch, there's going to be a ton of money bet on this game.
SUNY Buffalo, 8-2 against the number this year. So you have a 4-1. Oh, dare I say a square dog? Can we classify this as a square dog?
I'll say that we're recording this at 11 a.m. We're moving towards the neighborhood of a square dog. It's still a little early, I mean, but most of the money on a game like this will come in later in the day. People will walk into the book, realize, oh, there's a game tonight, and they'll bet on it. So, yeah, I mean, most of the money is going to come in as we get closer to kickoff, but the early returns are square dog.
All right, so you got Wolf Blitzer, about 35% pre-scenes reporting there, and then you'll let me know when you send the bat signal out?
Oh, you know I've got you on the bat signal. I got a Thursday night play, too. I got the North Texas Mean Green, minus 3 against Florida Atlantic. This game is Thursday night. Numbers up to 3.5 here at the Superbook, but probably our best college group, I would say, laid North Texas minus the 3 points.
Over the lane train, huh?
Yeah, and that's a Florida Atlantic's been a side that we've seen sharp money on a few times this year, but this week they're going the other way.
Yeah, that's great. God, I love the weekday action.
I know you do. I'm always looking for weekday games to give out because I know that the listeners love it too.
Yeah, we don't need.
How are you going to get through a Wednesday night without a bet on a MAC football game?
Yeah, I mean, it's like instead of 7 plays on Saturday, I'll take 2 if you can give me 2 weekday games on different nights.
Sure. Yeah, the rest of the stuff I got is all on Saturday. But here's a fun one. We had a group took UMass plus 44. And then they took it again, plus 43. So we're all the way down to 41 on that game. They're at Georgia. Another one of these tough SEC games this week. The SEC really putting themselves on the line with a lot of tough out-of-conference opponents this weekend.
Yeah. Got the Citadel marching into Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah.
you mentioned UMass. You know the head coach is?
I don't think.
Mark Whipple, former head coach at Brown University when I was there.
Mark Whipple. No, yeah. I didn't know that.
I think Boomer does some stuff like honorary captain, coin flip kind of stuff because he's very involved with the Brown program and then stayed in touch with Whipple over the years.
That's cool.
And Whipple, I believe, was the OC or quarterback's coach for the Steelers with Big Ben when they won the Super Bowl. I think he was a QB coach.
Really?
Yeah, so he coached at Brown, then went to UMass, then to the Steelers, was in the NFL for a little bit, and then went to Miami. I think he was an OC, the Hurricanes, and then now he's back to UMass as a head coach.
You know, it's a tough spot.
He played at Brown. He played at Brown. That's why as well.
A tough spot for Georgia to be focused this week. They got Georgia Tech next week. Georgia Tech's having a very good year. And then obviously they've got the SEC championship game against Alabama the week after. Could be a college football playoff berth on the line for them if they can win both of these games. So it's tough for them to stay focused with the Minutemen coming to town.
Yeah, I agree with that because they're probably training for the signature offense of Georgia Tech like every practice this week, not just next week. So I can see that.
Oh, I would certainly think so. You've got, when you play an offense like Georgia Tech, you've got to prepare in advance, and having a let's say weaker opponent in UMass on the schedule gives them that the ability to do just that.
What else you got for us?
I got Bowling Green. The group took +7. They're at Akron. That number's down to 6.5 here at the Superbook. More action for you, but this one's on a Saturday, so there won't be nearly as much money bet on it as tonight's game.
I didn't realize they played MAC football on Saturdays. I thought it was just midweek.
I wouldn't even have noticed. Why do they play MAC football on Saturdays? They've got such a niche in the market where they play all these weekday games. You got to go with it, man.
Yeah, and let's not sleep on the Fun Belt either. You got any of those midweek? Do we have any?
I don't see any
on the slate. We had one last week, I believe. I know for sure.
It's all MAC stuff this week, it looks like to me.
All right, so you got the Falcons +7 against the Zips. Anything a little bit more mainstream there?
I'll give you one more. It's the night game, and it's could be a bailout situation here, but this number's moved a lot. These guys took San Diego State +14.5. They're on the road at Fresno. Both of these programs are coming off of very bad losses last weekend. Well, Fresno State's not a very bad loss. A disappointing loss for Fresno State. A horrific loss for San Diego State. They lost at home to UNLV. That's got to be the worst loss that program's had in years. But this group took the Aztecs +14.5. This number's down to 12.5 here at the Superbook.
Yeah, that's an unacceptable loss. I believe, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name. Who's the NFL running back? Rashad Penny.
Rashad Penny.
He had a tweet where it had like the emoji, like something about like very, like, you know, the curious emoji, I think it was. Basically, like, what is going on?
Kids in these emojis, man. You know, I don't understand them myself, but just that is an unbelievable loss. Like, all kidding aside, and I should never have lumped in Fresno losing at Boise State with
that.
No,
but you were saying suggesting flat spot, like demoralizing. The line was 24 in that game, and UNLV wins outright on the road in SoCal.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable. And we did have a group, I'll give you one more. We did have a group that took UNLV +7. They play at Hawaii on Saturday night.
That's really
that
the bailout.
Scares me, to be honest with you.
That
one scares me, though, because UNLV is coming off of an enormous win last week. Now they got to go at Hawaii. This is essentially like their bowl game. To go back and play them again makes me a little nervous.
I agree. I talked about it with Phil Steele earlier when we taped on the podcast. It's like you want to bet Hawaii there, but they're pretty atrocious as well. So
they're pretty bad. Yeah, these guys took 7. We're down to 6.5. The game I'll have my eye on, of course, is in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I'm a little surprised. West Virginia only a 5-point favorite in this game. After we saw what Oklahoma State, Oklahoma was last week, that number got all the way up to like Oklahoma -22.5. Now, West Virginia, just a 5-point favorite on the road. I got to be honest, as a Mountaineer alum, that makes me a little nervous going into Saturday.
Yeah, that is a strange line. I don't know. I don't have an opinion there.
It's a scary one.
Pass for me.
And last time West Virginia was a road favorite right in that neighborhood, they were a 4.5, 5-point favorite. They played at Iowa State, and that was the only game the Mountaineers have lost this year.
Right.
You know, the Mountaineers, you have to think that in the back of their minds, they're looking ahead. They've got a game against Oklahoma next Friday night in Morgantown. If they can beat Oklahoma State, that OU game will be the biggest game in Morgantown in a decade. So it's a tricky spot for them. Definitely looks like a trap game for the Mountaineers.
Hmm. All right, bud. Thank you for squeezing us in your very, very busy schedule. And we'll get
it's a busy. It's a busy time of year now. We got a lot going on here. It's a busy time of year for all the sportsbook people, I think.
All right, bud. Thanks as always.
All right, we'll talk tomorrow.
All right, man. Thanks to John Murray. Thanks to Matt Eumanns. Thanks to Phil Steele. Loaded pod here. Three guests. A lot of college football talk, and also a little college hoops and NFL with Eumanns. Thanks to everyone for downloading and subscribing, rating, reviewing. Kai,
there it is.
Seamless, huh? And we'll catch you back here tomorrow for the NFL podcast. And Kai, how any confessions of a non-gambler?
No, good this week. It's usually always some stuff that pops up during the NFL show, so I'll definitely let you know then.
All right, man. We'll catch everyone back here tomorrow on the NFL podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.